6:06 a.m. We are broadcasting live from our studios on Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee. You can see all our breaking stories at Tennessee Star on the web at TennesseeStar.com. And don't forget, go every day at 5 o'clock. You'll see a fresh forecast by our chief meteorologist, Daphne DeLorean, as well as the Tennessee Star Evening News Update. We had probably our longest evening news update yesterday, published at 5 o'clock. Really good. The stories that you'll see there are the stories, the early notice of stories that we'll talk about on the program the following morning today, 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. here on Talk Radio 98.3 and 1510 WLAC. We'll be joined at 6:30 by the original All-Star panelist Crom Carmichael. And then at 7:30, it's time for Dr. K's Game Day Picks, brought to you by Action 24/7, a sports book for Tennesseans by Tennesseans, on the web at action247.com. That's action247.com. We are delighted to welcome back into our studios our very good friend, the columnist on Eastern Europe and Ukraine and Russia for the Epoch Times, Mr. Dominic Sansone. Good morning, Dominic.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Well, everything you told us, and you've been here several times, and you were actually on before the invasion, and then subsequently of Ukraine by Russia. That happened when? Was it May?
February 24th, I believe.
Is that when it happened?
Yeah. The initial special operation was announced by Putin.
That long ago?
Yep. It's been going for a while.
That's a long time. That's March, April, May. June, it's 4.5 months.
Yep. It's become a war of attrition, which I had predicted would happen. I
think you totally predicted that. Yeah. And so tell us catch us up on the status of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. My impression is that Russia is slowly winning a war of attrition, but I'm not the expert. And frankly, unless something terribly, significant happens, I find it just dreadful to read the daily news on Ukraine.
Yeah, well, where we're at right now, we had talked about those two autonomous republics in the southeast, which were the primary focus of Russia's special military operation.
Now, what are those autonomous
republics?
That's
the Luhansk People's Republic and the Donetsk, which formed together the Donbass.
In the southeast.
Yes, right.
Two autonomous republics.
Yes.
Part of Ukraine.
Right.
But border on Russia.
That's right.
So
ethnically Russian, mostly ethnically Russian, but there's a split there as well.
Okay, so give us an update on the status of the Russian invasion.
Right. So that one republic, the Luhansk People's Republic, has been totally taken over by Russia, liberated. They would use the word.
This is new. When did that take over?
Within the last week or so, Russia totally took control.
I didn't know that.
Yes. So in Donetsk, the other adjoining republic, is about half under Russian control, a little bit more, still half under control of the Ukrainian armed forces.
Is it inevitable that the Russians will take over that?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is, unfortunately. But it's really a war of attrition. They're doing what their best to destroy Ukrainian military forces, which I think was part of the original plan. If you remember when that special military operation was initially announced, that was one of Putin's main points, was the demilitarization of Ukraine. So clearly they weren't going to do that under their own volition. They're not, the West wasn't going to push them to do that. So I think that this is kind of the new, his own way of doing that, his strategy to just methodically destroy Ukraine's armed forces. So I think even a lot of those failed military operations in the beginning, the drive for Kiev, even originally for Kharkiv or Kharkov, which again they're kind of attacking again. I think those were kind of distractions so that they could concentrate forces in the southeast. They were operationally sloppy in those two initiatives. A lot of Russian troops, poorly trained Russian troops, were involved.
1 minute.
And so I think that now what you're seeing is this concentrated push in the southeast, which was really always the original plan, while methodically destroying Ukraine's armed forces.
What strength level are the Ukrainian armed forces now?
Dwindling, significantly dwindling. There's, a difference in reporting between Russia and Western media. Of course, Russia says that they're vastly being decimated. We say that they are losing, and I think that for the most part, you kind of see a lot of major publications preparing Western audiences for Ukraine's eventual defeat.
And what Ukraine's eventual defeat will look like after we've given them $40 billion plus.
Much more than that.
Yeah. Much more than that, yeah. That's, we want to talk about that.
Definitely.
And then let's project out. When that eventual defeat will happen, what will it look like, mm-hmm. and what will it mean for the United States of America? We're talking with Dominic Sansone, Epoch Times contributor, and a good friend of this program. Back after this. Six 18 a.m. broadcasting live from our studios on Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee. In studio, our guests are very good friend Dominic Sansone, a columnist and expert on Eastern Europe, writes for the Epoch Times, about to go to Hillsdale College to get a PhD.
Oh, yeah.
And so we are rooting for that, and I think you do a great job up there. We'll miss you, but when you come back here, you'll come on the show, right?
For sure.
Okay. So, by the way, to our listeners, the most interesting conversations here often happen off-air. We're not going to share that off-air conversation with everybody, but I can guarantee it was very interesting.
Yeah, you guys are missing out for sure.
Yeah, but no, really, what they want to know. So, okay, let's. You're the expert on this. How is this going to play out? Will Russia? What sort of victory do you anticipate they will have? When is it likely to have? What will Ukraine look like after that? And what will it do to the interest of the United States after this plays out?
Yeah, well, I've always been pretty adamant that the only thing I know for sure is their interest in that Donbass region. The rest is kind of, Putin is unpredictable. Obviously, this entire special military operation was not expected. So if he's going to go further as far as Kharkiv, all the way maybe to that Dnieper River, which splits Ukraine down the middle, they're still fighting around Odessa. I didn't think that would really be a geopolitical concern of his. It didn't really make sense. It would be much harder to hold that much territory. But we'll see. As far as the geopolitical situation in general, though, it's certainly changed already with Finland and Sweden applying for NATO membership.
And likely to be accepted.
Right, membership. As soon as they resolve
And Russia
it.
Has pushed them into that.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, they didn't want to do it.
Definitely.
But they both have Arctic borders with mm-hmm. Russia, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yes, they do, which is, again, a big...
Although I can't imagine that anybody would invade a country through the Arctic, but who knows, right?
Yeah, I don't know. But as far as Ukraine is concerned, again, I think that was always goal number one. What we're going to see, EU membership now is, of course, on the table for Ukraine, but NATO membership is off, which was another concern of Russia's. So I don't know if the situation will really stabilize as far as we're used to stability in mm-hmm. Eastern Europe since the end of the Cold War. But, it's going to look different for sure. I think that Russia will have a little bit more of an outsized influence, but not so much. I mean, in that region, yes. But, again, just with those surrounding countries already looking more...
Dominic Sansone with the Epoch Times, will this be an ongoing military conflict, or will there come a time when there is a peace treaty of some sort, and will Russia take these two autonomous republics that in Ukraine... and make them part of Russia, and when would that resolution happen?
That's very hard to say. The animosity is going to be there mm-hmm. for a very long time, generations potentially. But as far as maybe some kind of peace treating, a viable ceasefire, I think that we will eventually see that, hopefully in the next 6 months. I think as Russia's victory really becomes inevitable, at least as far as those geopolitical
goals. So by the first quarter, this will drag on until the first quarter of 2023.
I would say so, yes.
Okay.
And again, it depends that Luhansk Republic is totally under Russian control, that Donetsk Republic, which was really that other autonomous zone that was primarily Russia's concern, is now really being concentrated on, and that's really where the forces are being...
Will Ukraine be utterly decimated by the ceasefire, or will it still remain as a viable country?
I think it'll certainly be more of a rump state. I think its military capacity will be seriously depleted economically, it's been weak, but with the amount of Western support, I'm sure that we will make it a goal to keep them kind of humming along just because of the amount of money, as we talked already, closer to really $100 billion now over the entire span of the conflict.
So if the legal but not legitimate grifter-in-chief, Joe Biden, would call you on the phone right now and say, Dominic, what is your advice to me as the commander-in-chief of American military forces with regards to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, what would your advice be to him?
I would tell him to push Zelensky for a peace negotiation. Again, the terms are only more unfavorable for him now because of the amount of money that we've been using to prolong this conflict. But of course, my number one concern, I think every good-hearted person's number one concern, is an end to the bloodshed. So I would certainly want a viable agreement that's going to save Ukrainian lives and Russian lives for that matter. I mean, it's a war. It's terrible on both sides. And then hopefully bring some of that money back here and start addressing the concerns that we have in this country.
So do you think that's advice that what will President Biden's foreign policy be in this situation?
If the passes any precedent, I think he's going to continue giving them money. I think that it's too much of a, you know, kind of media narrative type issue where he can't be seen as backing off on this, especially after the Afghanistan debacle, after just kind of his failed foreign policy in general. He's going to want to keep that conflict prolonged. It also diverts attention from more pressing problems here.
How much money has the United States given to Ukraine?
Over the span of it, it's closer, I'd say, to $100 billion.
$100 billion.
Yeah, there's obviously that big $40 billion allotment, but there's been, you know, more money as well.
How much more do you expect over the next year? In addition to that, do you expect that the Biden administration will give to Ukraine?
I don't know an exact number, but I would say that there's been a shift in the media, which you can tell from every publication, from, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, to more conservative publications, where it's kind of like they're prepping the American populace for Ukrainian defeat, sort of saying that it looks like Russia's winning now, you know, things are after, you know, a good start and all this kind of stuff. Even though, as I had spoken previously, I think if you understand the strategy a little bit more broadly and the Russian mindset going into this conflict, it was always really inevitable. So not only, I mean, money is of course a concern, but we could have saved, I think, a lot more lives, even though it wouldn't have been as politically favorable to the current situation.
Now, you get another phone call, and it's from either former President Donald Trump or Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to come on board as their foreign policy advisor. And they, mm-hmm. let's say they're running for president in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell them about Ukraine?
About Ukraine, because I'd have a lot of other things to say as well.
but just focus on your area of expertise, right?
Sure,
because
you've
been to Bulgaria,
yeah,
for a year.
Mm-hmm.
You speak what languages?
Russian.
You speak?
I speak Russian.
You speak Russian.
Well. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say that we again have to be pushing Ukraine for a peace settlement. I think that we have to get the rest of Europe on board with that as well. We need to consider different energy options. We need to start producing oil and gas in this country as well, which is whatever the current administration says comes down to just being more favorable to them in general. Nobody's going to be...
See, this is a very important point, because now, because the Biden administration has done so many things to try and kill the oil and gas industry here through any number of rulings and regulations, et cetera, made us energy dependent.
Right.
At the same time, Europe, Germany in particular,
mm-hmm.
It totally dependent upon Russia for oil and gas.
Right, right.
And the prices doubled. So the Russian war machine is being fueled by the bad energy policies of the Biden administration, it seems to me.
Exactly. And things are getting very bad energy-wise in Europe, of course. There's talk now of restarting the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, sending Russian gas to Germany for the EU. Because, again, the situation is so bad. I mean,
it was shut off. When was it shut off? At the beginning of the war?
Yes. Shut off at the beginning of the war, yes.
Do you think it's inevitable that it will be restarted?
It has to. Yeah. It has to. There's no alternative. The United States,
well, the United States would be an alternative,
right,
if Joe Biden did not hate and try to destroy the oil and gas industry.
That's exactly right.
Well,
we're really learning what a geopolitical weapon energy can be, or hindrance.
Dominic Sansone, you're off to get a PhD at Hillsdale. You got a full ride?
Oh, yeah.
And you got a good financial deal?
Very good financial deal.
And listen, We'll tell former President Trump next time we talk to him.
All right.
Or DeSantis or any of the Republican guys. You want a foreign policy advisor? Dominic Sansone is your man.
Oh, well, I would appreciate that.
All right,
very
Dominic.
Much.
Thanks so much for joining
us. Thanks for having me on, Michael.
When we come back, it'll be the original All-Star panelist, Crom Carmichael. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.